the next half hour, we will hear from Byron Malott, Charles Oxrock, and Donna Christie, all with the Alaska Federation of Natives. I'm Mo Wasley, and welcome to Potlatch. Byron Malott of Yakutat has recently been appointed to the presidency of AFN, succeeding Sam Keto. I talked with him recently at Anchorage about plans to reorganize the board structure of the statewide Native organization.
The board of directors of AFN now is comprised of the presidents or their designees of each of the 12 profit-making corporations. Most of the programs which AFN operates have to do with the human resource, social service side of Native affairs, while the advocacy function out of this office has to do with issues that affect the regional corporations, and a lot of our research and technical work has to do with, and legal work has to do with assistance to profit-making corporations on issues such as D2 easements, so forth. But the board has recognized that there's a problem of representation there, and we're looking at reorganizing the AFN board to more accurately reflect the issues that AFN deals with. And the board has appointed a reorganization task force, and within the next several months, that's one major issue that I'll be working with. Hopefully, we'll have AFN reorganized and the reorganization in effect by the time of the next annual meeting of AFN, which will be next October. In essence, the reorganization revolves around bringing the nonprofit corporations that are recognized in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act into AFN at the same policy-making level as the profit-making corporations. We're looking at making the AFN convention a forum that will allow significant input by individual natives into AFN policy, and hopefully that will be reflected through the reorganization also. At the same time, I think that the AFN annual meeting, the convention, could be used to allow regional profit-making corporations to let shareholders and other native groups and other Alaskans get a better understanding of what it is that they are and the kinds of things that they're doing through displays, using something along the lines of a trade fair, for example, which are normal in the business community.
Byron continues on to tell of confusion in the interpretation of Public Law 93638 and resolving the litigation between natives and other groups.
We've got issues in litigation, you know, that affect the Alaska Natives, essentially issues revolving around easement questions and working with Washington Council. AFN will be working closely with the regions on trying to resolve those disputes through litigation. One of the suits is the Chulista v. Kleppe suit, which was transferred from Washington District Court to District Court here in Alaska. The other is the Public Easement Defense Fund suit, which in which the plaintiffs have served every one of the village corporations in the state and brought them into the suit. And there are common issues in both suits that we're concerned with. I think that the kinds of issues that exist between natives and non-natives in our state are the kinds of issues that exist between any minority group and a majority group, you know, anywhere. The issues we deal with are essentially issues that deal, you know, that result from human nature and centuries of racial conditioning. And but I still feel very strongly that the issues that are common to Alaskans of any race are much more significant than those that separate us. I understand that those federal agencies that have an obligation to make the Indian Self-Determination Act work, even among themselves, are having difficulty in interpreting what the specific provisions of the Act mean and what is required to carry it out. And I, you know, sense that there's a great deal of confusion and frustration at the present time. You know, any time you have a major shift in the purpose and function of any federal agency, you know, I'm sure you have some resistance based on the concern for agency and job survival. But I think a large, you know, part of it revolves around the complexity of the Act itself and the need at the local level for Indian groups to themselves make basic judgments about who ought to be eligible and under what kinds of structures. I think that that's got to come about.
And what lies in the future for the programs, personnel, and the purpose of the Alaska Federation of Natives?
And in terms of the kind of people that I want, looking at the programs that AFN operates, you know, I think that I'm going to be responsible for the implementation of policy as reflected by the board. I intend to be very active in the spokesman role that is crucial to AFN's function, and I'm going to be looking for top management and administrative talent to fill the vacancies. I may, and am even thinking about the possibility of having only a single executive VP for management within AFN. And in the program areas, virtually all of, except for the health affairs division, all of the programs have all management positions filled at this time. In the human resource program area, I'd like to see a better consolidation of program effort. I'd like to see us have fewer but more flexible kinds of programs of training and technical assistance. I think AFN needs to be beefed up both in terms of dollars and manpower in that area. We need to concentrate on also, though, on efficiency and overall economy. That's one area that I'll be looking at. In terms of AFN's future needs, once again, looking at it from an in-house perspective, I think that AFN relatively soon will need full-time legal counsel in-house. We have legal counsel through law firms on retainer at present. I think that the whole issue of public affairs as they affect natives in the state is something that AFN needs to be looking at. And I intend to be, at some point in the next several months, making a recommendation to begin looking at our role in that area to the board.
little bit of Lagans and Messina. Representatives of regional associations met in August of 74 at Barrow to address the question of how to organize a mental health and alcoholism program under the Health Affairs Division at AFN. It took a year for them to organize into what is now the Human Services Division, and its director, Charles Oxrock, talked about their role.
We're mainly working on the Indian Health Service grants and contracts under the self-determination as to how the funds should be dispersed to the rural communities, the regional entities, the health corporations and the nonprofit arm. And what it does is mainly give authority to 405 villages to determine their own destiny statewide and to manage their own programs. And there'll be approximately $23 million coming into Alaska to establish these programs throughout the whole state for the native communities. And just recently, just a couple months ago, President Ford, after four vetoes, finally passed a bill called the Indian Healthcare Improvement Act of 1976. And it was signed in October 1976, Public Law 94437. Under Section Title II, Section 201, it established adequate funding for Native American programs on mental health and alcoholism. This year, we're planning on writing a Senate bill to be introduced in the state legislatures. And what it is going to be is a supplemental appropriations to Alaska Department of Health and Social Services to expand more state funds for the rural areas. And this will be both in indirect and direct services. The indirect services is going to encompasses technical assistance and advocacy, and also to do statewide planning for developing rural programs, and to also work on Alaska Native policies on alcoholism, drug abuse, and mental health. The direct services is going to be used for treatment and rehabilitation at the regional level to implement their own programs according to their own needs and their own priorities. And AFN is totally out of giving directions to the rural programs, but we rather hear from the villages as to what they need so we can address those at the state and national level. According to the federal 2C study program, the Native Americans, Alaska Native, had the poorest health delivery system in the whole nation and the whole universe. In other words, if somebody was to die of a heart attack in a village, it was not adequately recorded, and they did not have enough adequate equipment to do any emergency medical services for a cardiac arrest or emergency gunshot wound or something in that area. And what the Healthcare Improvement Act does is, nationwide, it appropriates $123 million for all Indian and Alaska Native programs to adequately update the healthcare system.
Charles described some problems unique to Alaska, such as the high costs of holding a meeting.
Let me use Aleut Privilof Planning Commission for an example. Just to hold one board meeting from the 11 communities down there for 1 week, it costed them $7,000. And to get a consultation education grant to DHEW back east, it also costed them, the executive committee, $5,000. So just within the two short weeks, that's approximately 10 working days, they were spending $12,000 just to do two planning meetings. And that's quite a few funds that could be utilized in maybe hiring a coordinator or something in that area. So we can tell that Alaska is really faced with harsh transportation problems. We have no highway network like the lower 48s. We have to depend on our bush airlines and the commercial airlines within our own regions. The other problem is high cost of living, high operating costs, overlapping agency jurisdictions. There's at least 7 different agencies that operate statewide. One they call HSA, Health System Agency, Indian Health Service, Public Law 92-203 Native Claims Settlement Act established 12 regions. The 2C study program has 9 regions, and the mental health section has 10. So you can see 10 overlapping jurisdictions, which is pretty hard to deliver adequate planning, very comprehensive to meet our rural needs. And this is one area that we're trying to address, is that the state and federal agencies should collate with the native corporations so they can have a better planning agency within each of the corporations. And it would give us some operating monies to fund direct service programs. This would be a solution to our problems that we have been facing for past 20 years.
Mr. Oxirok outlines the future plans for the Human Services Division of AFN.
Phase one is to upgrade the community centers that were brought up by the mini-grant programs. And then the second one is to evaluation of all researches that are going on in the rural areas, because most of the villages don't know that the Ombudsman Bill of the Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971 was passed in 1976 this year. Each of the communities, according to the Native Claims Settlement Act, has the right to refuse any research or case studies done by the state, federal, or any individual researcher, not unless you sign a letter of approval to any research group that's going into your community. Presently, there's only 3 of us working here. One administrative assistant, who's Esther Aswak. She's from Barrow, and she's in charge of all correspondence and reports that we hand in. And Tiny Devlin is originally from Holy Cross, and she's our media coordinator. And she produces booklets, calendars, brochures, coloring books. Right now she's currently working on a coloring book as to how a child is impacted by a metropolitan city coming from the villages. Our plans are to increase at least 3 more people into our little shop here. One would be a graphic artist to do posters for the grade schools and high schools on alcoholism, drug abuse, mental health, developmental disabilities. Developmental disabilities means mental retardation, cerebral palsy, or other disabilities that our people are facing. So we can go into community education and prevention. And we would have 1 senior citizens planner. And this person would be an expert in planning senior citizens programs for our elders, because I feel that we're far neglecting as young leaders our elders and the knowledge that they carry and the preservation of the traditional stories that they keep in their heads and the songs. How do we preserve those? And the other one would be a adult mental disabilities coordinator. And these are for people that are severely handicapped that cannot do anything for themselves. This person would be planning facilities and activities for the regions and go on to the regions and find out if these are the plans that they would like to come up with. And I see human services as one statewide planning endowment planning unit. And the direct services would be in each of the 12 regions and their presiding communities within their own regions. And I think this way we can better utilize the existing funds for direct services.
Thank you.
We continue on with Donna Christie, who was the Deputy Director of Technical Assistance with the AFN. She was formerly Director of Manpower Services, and she talked about some of the problems in employment and training of natives on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
For the Alaska Pipeline permit, they had a number of Alaska natives that they wanted to be hired, a certain set number. And I didn't feel like, you know, you could number Alaska natives or else the number, I didn't feel like the number was great enough. I feel that in the areas of training, a lot of it was just bodies. You know, they didn't really make good selections in some areas. A lot of the people who went to work on the pipeline were just bodies. You know, they might have been qualified for one thing, but because a position wasn't open or available right then, manpower people would put them in any job, you know, just so they had a position and they had the count on the line. And those people were not satisfied with the job or couldn't handle it and were either terminated or quit. You know, there was a lot of things that, to me, that were wrong. I went out, the first time I went out onto a pipeline and into the camps and stayed, I just was really mortified. It was pretty bad to me, the situation, to have to stay in a little tiny room on your work hours are off. You go to work, you eat, you go to your room, go to the recreation hall and watch TV, play pool or whatever. There's just nowhere to go, nothing to do. People really, really get bored out there. I also feel like the 9 weeks on and a week off was too much. I feel like that the work week should, or the number of weeks worked should only be 8 at the most, and preferably around 6. I think that the statistics show that people who are quitting because of, you know, just being tired of working and things after, you know, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, they started quitting on the line between 6 and 7 weeks just to be able to come home, and then they try to get back out there again after they've had their little rest or whatever. And that I think that if the number of weeks worked was cut down, they wouldn't have had such a high attrition out there. And the people, if they were out only 6 weeks and had a week or two off, whatever the case may be, you know, could go back to work without having any hassles or anything because they're still employees. And I just really feel like that would make a lot of difference out there. Also, some kind of a cross-cultural thing so that, you know, people who don't know anything about Alaska Natives, you know, could have some kind of a program for a day or two of what Alaska Native life is really like, you know, some kind of films or something, showing them where, you know, some of the reasons why Alaska Natives are the way they are, you know, especially working together. They don't understand Alaska Natives and they just get down on them, you know. And that caused a lot of problems out there. I also feel like they made a pretty good effort on the pipeline corridor, the villages on the pipeline corridor, putting the people to work that were real close to the pipeline. They had the 6-village agreement up north. And they put most of the people to work there that wanted to go to work.
Donna expressed her views on changes in Fairbanks and non-Alaskans coming up to Alaska.
I don't like to see all the outsiders coming up here. It used to be not so bad when they did because they liked it and stayed, and they made it their home. But now over 50% of the people from outside who come up here are not here to make a home. They're here to make some money and leave. Take the money to their home, and they don't care about the people here. They don't care about the looks of our state. Have you noticed how filthy that it's getting? Garbage on the roads, all over the place. After living in Fairbanks for 23 years, I never thought I'd ever want to move out of there, and I was really homesick when I moved. But now when I go back there, it isn't even like home anymore. It's just a bunch of hustle and bustle and people you don't even know. Used to be you could go anywhere and see people you knew If you were ever in trouble, somebody would stop and help you, no matter where you were at, what time of the day or the night it was. Now people just keep driving by because they're afraid to stop for the crime that's happening up there.
Ms. Christie has some plans to form a private business in Anchorage.
Right now I'm working with three other people to start a private business, and I really think that it would be a good one if we could ever get it together. It's a management and personnel consulting firm to assist whoever needs areas of training staff, you know, for positions. If they're looking to have an Alaska Native into a position, we would provide somebody to train them on the job for that position and just step out when the person's ready. We're also in the areas of labor relations. Two of the people that I'm working with are already professionals in that field. And right now, that's what we're working on. We're working towards getting that business started.
I'm Mo Osley, and thank you for listening.
Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.